Today, I wanted to continue really what I was talking about last week, but to take it from another perspective. Because you may recall that indeed, the maftir that we read yesterday was the parsha that we read, the beginning of the parsha that we read last week, Kisisa. And indeed, yesterday was the first of four special Shabbatot that Chazal enacted, that we commemorate before Nisan, starting either the month of Adar Sheni, or Adar, or the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar. These are called the Arba Parshios, the four special Torah readings. The first one is Parsha Shkalim, about the Shekel. The next one before Purim is going to be Parshas Zochor, remembering Amalek. The third is going to be Parshas Para, about the red heifer. And the fourth, before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, is going to be Parshas Achodesh, dealing with the laws of Korban Pesach. But I want to talk about the first one, and again, you'll see how it's going to be connected to Mishle, and that is Parsha Shkalim. Now, let me remind you, I don't want to go over, obviously, last week's shiur, but let me remind you that there are two different Machtzis HaShekel offerings that Bnei Yisrael gave. One was a one-time offering, and the other is an annual offering. The one-time offering, every person gave a half shekel of silver, and they were melted down, and they formed the sockets in which the boards or the beams of the Mishkan were inserted, and that kept the boards and the beams in place, as it were. That is called the Adanim, and that, of course, was only a one-time donation. That wasn't annual. That went to the construction of the Mishkan. Last week, we talked about the Adonim and the significance of the half shekel to the Adonim, and you'll recall that just as the Adonim are the foundation of the Mishkan, they represent Emuna, which is the foundation of the Mishkan that we build with our hearts and our souls. And therefore, the Adonim are a remez to Emuna, and the fact that each board was supported by two sockets indicates there are two levels of emunah you have to have, emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and emunah in yourself, that Hashem gave you the ability to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and have a relationship with Him. I don't think I quoted Rav Tzadok's beautiful remark, but Rav Tzadok says, Kishem Shechayav Adam Lahamin BaKadosh Baruch Hu, just as a person must believe in the omnipotence, the greatness of God, kachu mechuyav lahamin biatzmo. A person must believe in himself that they are capable of great things, that they have a potential, that they have a purpose, that what they do matters in the world. And that is the story of the Adonim, which represents the idea of emunah, which has to be the foundation of the Mishkan that we build in our lives. Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, in my heart, I build a Mishkan, a dwelling place for the divine. Now today, I want to talk about the other Machzis HaShekel, which actually has a different meaning. And this is an annual half shekel offering, excuse me, that went towards the korbanos. You might call it the operating budget as opposed to the building fund. Right? The first machzis HaShekel went to the building. The second machzis HaShekel, which is annual, goes to the operating budget, which are the korbanos. Remember the concept. The concept here is that all of the korbanos that are brought, I don't mean private korbanos. If you have to bring a private sin offering, that is you pay for that. But we're talking about the public korbanos, the daily korban tomid, the musaf that was brought on Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Yom Tov, the Yom Kippur offerings, the oil of the menorah, the incense for the ketores. Somebody had to buy them, and these were bought with publicly collected money based on the half shekel annual tax. And it had to come from that money. You could not have a private contributor. You could not have a Parnes Hayom in the Beis HaMikdash, like they have in yeshivas. Today's learning is sponsored by somebody. Well, in the Beis HaMikdash, you would never see a sign that says, today's korbanos are sponsored by somebody. It wasn't allowed. The korbanos of the congregation must come from shkalim. Now, here is the problem. Not only must they come from shkalim, but they must come from new money that's collected for this year. Meaning to say, let's assume that last year we wind up with an accounting surplus. Meaning to say, we collected more money than we needed for the korbanos. Let's say because the price of animals went down. So we have, again, anyone that works in government knows this, we have a surplus. What do you do? What do you do with the surplus? So the halacha actually is, you cannot carry over, it's very similar, you cannot carry over the surplus to the next year. You have to use it for other things, fixing potholes. The Mishnah actually gives you different things you use the surplus for. But korbanos have to be from newly collected money for this specific year. Now, the fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash does not begin in Tishrei. The fiscal year begins Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That actually means Rosh Chodesh Nisan, starting on that day, the korbanos have to be purchased from money that was specifically collected for that year. Which means, although people paid their half shekel over the course of the whole year, right, some people paid their taxes late, but there had to be enough money that they could at least start buying korban. Remember, you know, they don't need the entire collection to buy korbanos. So, as a result, when did the Beis HaMikdash start collecting the half shekel? Rosh Chodesh Adar. 1 month before Nisan, they began to announce, pay your half shekel, because that would ensure that by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there would be enough money to buy the korbanos. And the Mishnah goes on and says, by the 15th of Adar, right, the Purim in Yerushalayim, that's when they would begin active collection efforts by taking collateral and the like for people who weren't paying. Yeah. No. No, there are two different types of korbanos. This is very important. There are korbanos that people bring as individuals. A woman after childbirth, a sin offering. And that of course, comes from your own money. You bring your own animals. We're not talking about that. I'm talking about the korbanos that were brought on behalf of the Jewish people. There was a daily offering in the morning and in the afternoon. There were additional offerings on Shabbos. There was the oil by which they lit the menorah. There was the incense. These are not private korbanos. These are korbanos brought on behalf of Am Yisrael, and those korbanos have to come from the half shekel. So it's very different. If you gave birth to a child, indeed, on the 81st day after a girl, birth of a girl, on the 41st day after the birth of a boy, you would bring your own birds, etc. Even then, by the way, the Beis HaMikdash also had a store, meaning if you, instead of you having to get the birds, you could bring money and buy your birds. But that wouldn't be the half shekel. That would be your private purchase. So you could have a choice, really. You could buy from the inventory of the temple, or you could bring your own animal. But that's not the korbanos that we're talking about. Now, since Rosh Chodesh Adar is when they began announcing the collection of shkalim, so today we do not have a Beis HaMikdash. Today we do not give the Machzis HaShekel. So Zecher LaMikdash, to commemorate what was done when there was a Mikdash, on Rosh Chodesh Adar, if it's Shabbos, or the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar, like this year, if Rosh Chodesh is not on Shabbos, we read about the mitzvah of machzis hashekel zecher lemikdash. Now, it is also the case that right before Megillah reading, there is a plate in a shul called machzis hashekel. But again, that is a minhag. That actually is not even a din. That is a custom to kind of remind us of machzis hashekel. But that's not the real machzis hashekel. The real d'oraisa mitzvah of machzis hashekel is when you have a beis hamikdash, and this goes towards the korbanos. Did you want to say? No, that's a good point. Basically, they're giving it for the new year, meaning it's not so much when they collect it, it's what time period are you giving it for. And by the way, if you want to know, basically, there's a whole tractate of Mishnah called Maseches Shekalim. And interestingly enough, there is no Babylonian Talmud on it, but there is a Talmud Yerushalmi. And for those of you that are familiar with the Daf Yomi cycle, it is an anomaly, because it is the only Yerushalmi tractate that is part of the Daf Yomi cycle. So when people are learning Bavli, when they hit Maseches Shkalim, they learn Talmud Yerushalmi. So Art Scroll wasn't sure if they should use the green cover or the brown cover, because they actually put it out in two editions, because the brown cover is their Bavli, and the green cover is their Yerushalmi. And it really is, if you're a CPA in particular, you would enjoy a Maseches Shkalim, because it really is a lot of accounting rules. What do you do with surpluses? What do you do with shortfalls, right? You don't have enough, etc. How late? Are there penalties if people pay late, right? Because sometimes, in fact, you have to pay back taxes. If I didn't give my Maseches Shkalim this year, I have to give double next year, meaning even though essentially it couldn't be used. Right, so all of the accounting rules of temple accounting are in Maseches Shkalim. Of course, keep in mind when Mashiach comes, a lot of these rules are going to be updated. The Beis Hamikdash will undoubtedly go to computerization. No, this is no joke, and they'll have the inventory control. Somebody wrote a novel, a rabbi, kind of a modern Orthodox rabbi, wrote a novel about life in the days of Mashiach. And he actually talks about, in fact, I think it involves some accounting scandal in the Beis Hamikdash. I'm not sure, I didn't read it. But, you know, he talks about inventory control, and there'll have to be a chief controller of the Beis Hamikdash and the like. And it's not a joke. I mean, all of these things we will need to have. I mean, why? I mean, just because Mashiach comes doesn't mean we go back to the Stone Age. We can still use modern technology even when Mashiach comes. And the like. So Maseches Shkalim deals with accounting. Okay. So again, don't confuse the two Machzis HaShekels. Machzis HaShekel 1 went to the sockets. That's a one-time thing. Machzis HaShekel 2 is an annual donation. And in fact, we have historical records from Josephus and the like about even the Jews who lived in Babylonia, Chutz La'aretz, you'd have to send in your Machzis HaShekel. And they talk about huge convoys, like armored trucks, because keep in mind, right? You may have had the equivalent of Wells Fargo, millions of dollars, or, you know, many more shkalim, so to speak, being transported. And obviously, this was a target for robbery and the like, and they had armed convoys. But sometimes there were shkalim that were stolen, and the Mishnah has to deal with risk of loss. If I gave my half shekel and it got stolen en route, do I have to give it again, or is it the temple's loss? Right. So all of these are the interesting halachic shailas that the Machzis HaShekel gives rise to. Yeah.
Was there also a method of census taking?
So this is an interesting question. Clearly, the first Machzis HaShekel that was given in the Torah, which was for the Adonim, was used to count the people as well. And that's why it was a uniform requirement. However, the Machzis HaShekel as an annual contribution could have been used as a census, but it was not necessarily done so every year, meaning to say they didn't always use it as a census device. It was really a separate mitzvah of giving a half shekel. Now, here too, the Torah says, The poor person gives no less, and the rich person gives no more. It has to be uniform. And similar to the question I raised last week, but it'll be a different answer for this half shekel, the question is, why is uniformity so important here? After all, I understand, as hard-hearted as it may sound, I can understand why the poor guy can't give less. Because, you know, we have minimum standards. You know, you got to do your share. So if you have to borrow the money, borrow it. All right, I understand that. But why can't a rich person give more? Who's going to stop that? All right, good. So in government, we sometimes have these limitations on political contributions. But I can tell you that in most dose of Torah, we will take all money that is offered. Hopefully, at least if it comes from an honest source, although not always that even. Meaning to say, if a yeshiva has full tuition, and some parent says, you know, Baruch Hashem, Hashem blessed me a lot, I want to give more than full tuition. I want to give double tuition for my son. I can't imagine most yeshivas saying, sorry, we don't take it. You're not allowed to give more. Right? And yet, when it comes to the Machzis HaShekel, the Torah insists that the rich person can give no more than the poor person. Now, one answer might be, when the Machzis HaShekel also functioned as a census device to count people, then you understand it only works if everybody gives the same amount, because then I can figure out the population by counting the half shekels. If one guy gives 10 and one guy gives 1 and one person gives 3, then how do I know from the shekels how many people there are? So that would be an answer, but as I indicated, the Machzis HaShekel was not always a census device, and even when it was not a census device, there is a requirement of uniformity. Yes?
Was it everyone who had to give, or was it a certain age?
Okay, so this is a little tricky. In point of fact, it was only men, and in point of fact, only men from the age of 20 and up. So even boys who were bar mitzvah did not have to give. Now, this has repercussions even today, by the way, because I indicated that there is a minhag. It's a minhag. It's not the Torah law. There is a minhag on Purim, or before Purim, so in Chutzlar, outside of Yerushalayim, it'll be Tainus Esther in the afternoon. In Yerushalayim, it'll be before Megillah reading. Baruch Hashem, it's not, right? We don't have the problem of Tainus Esther going into Megillah reading, right? That's one of the benefits of having Purim on the 15th. We don't have the problem of fasting and going into Megillah reading. But there is a minhag of Machzis HaShekel, Zecher LeMikdash. But many opinions say, if you want to make it parallel to the Zecher LeMikdash, only men above 20 and women and kids below 20 don't have to give. Others say that the adult, the parent, the male figure, the father above 20, should give a Machzis HaShekel for every member of their family. And I think the prevailing custom is, indeed, they do that, even though that was not done in the Beis HaMikdash. But in the Beis HaMikdash proper, the chiyuv of Machzis HaShekel was only miben esrim shana v'mala. Okay. So now, let me go back with this idea of Machzis HaShekel and quote to you an interesting Gemara in Maseches Megillah. The Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, the Gemara brings a statement of Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, called Reish Lakish. Remember, Reish Lakish is a very, very colorful and interesting history. Reish Lakish's younger years, he was a highway robber. He was a ganef. He would accost people. Maybe he even killed. We're not really sure. And one time he accosted Rav Yochanan, the great rabbi Rav Yochanan. And Rav Yochanan said, a man of your talent, why don't you learn Torah? And he said back to Rav Yochanan, who was an extraordinarily handsome person, a man with your beauty should become a prostitute. Kind of a very coarse remark. And Rav Yochanan said, my sister is even more beautiful. If you learn Torah, maybe you could marry my sister. So perhaps Reish Lakish was motivated out of an ulterior motive, but he became a great, great Torah scholar. He married Rav Yochanan's sister, indeed. And throughout Shas, they are a common pair that argue with each other in Torah. Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish, Rav Shimon ben Lakish. So Reish Lakish is a very, very powerful example of a Baal Tshuva who became a very, very great, great Torah scholar. And in fact, in Maseches Chagiga, Reish Lakish says, and you can't help but connect it to his past. He says, even the sinners of Israel are as filled with good deeds and goodness as the pomegranate, as the rimon is filled with seeds. And again, I don't think it's a stretch to say that he's thinking about his own life, that no matter how bad a person may be, there is this tremendous goodness within that can bring a person to God. But anyway, Reish Lakish says the following about the half shekel. Goloi v'yadua. It was well known. Lifnei mi she'amar v'hayah olam. Before God. That Haman would try to buy the right to kill the Jews by giving shekels. Remember what the Megillah says? Haman wants to get permission. He wants to get legal permission to commit genocide. So he figures he has to pay a bribe. He offers Achashverosh an enormous amount of silver. Aseret alafim. Kikar kesef. 10,000 talents. A kikar is around 100 pounds of silver. Aseret alafim, therefore, is what? 1 million pounds, whatever number of tons that is. He offered Achashverosh all of this shkalim to kill the Jews. Achashverosh, out of the kindness of his heart, said, "You can do it for free. You don't have to give me anything." Okay. Achashverosh turned down the money. But nevertheless, Reish Lakish says the following. Hashem knew that Haman would try to buy the right to kill us by giving shkalim. Therefore, he gave us a mitzvah of giving our shkalim earlier, because Haman was buying the right for the 13th of Adar. Hashem gives us the mitzvah of Machzor HaShekel starting Rosh Chodesh Adar in order that our shekalim should defeat his shekalim. That's what the Gemara says, that Haman's shekalim kind of buy the right to kill us, we give our shekels first. Now the question is, what does that mean? I mean, Haman's shkalim are long gone. Haman is long gone. Haman is hung. There is no Haman's shkalim that are really a sakana for us. And how do the shkalim we give to the Beis HaMikdash countermand Haman's shkalim? And anyway, what power, what efficacy would Haman's shkalim have anyway? The implication is there is some power in Haman's shkalim that we have to countermand. What power is that? Haman was bribing Achashverosh. What? That wouldn't do anything anyway in the world of Ruchnius. So Bichlal, what is Reish Lakish's kavana in connecting the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel with the Shekalim as a way of countermanding the Shekalim of Haman? So here is something from the Sfas Emes, Rav Tzadok, Shei Mishmuel, a number of Sfarim have this Mahalach. All of us know that one of the most unusual features of Megillas Esther is that the name of Hashem is not mentioned. Amazing. And the reason for that is because the whole story of Megillas Esther is the story that even when Hashem is in hiding, even when he's concealed, he is still running the show, he is still looking after us, he is still protecting us. Because there is nothing in the story of Esther that is supernatural. Unlike Pesach, where you have the Makos and Kriyas Yamsuf, and the hand of Hashem is so open that you cannot deny, every single event in Megillas Esther, if you're not a believer in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you could attribute to coincidence. Right? Mordechai was in the right place at the right time. Haman was in the wrong place at the right time. You know, all of these different things. So, one, you know, how would the New York Times write it up? How would the Haaretz write it up, you know? Some people think, you know, there was a God involved, but, you know, loved Dafka, just, right? So the lesson is, only in retrospect, when all the pieces come together, do you see the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why the very name Esther, of course, comes from Hastara, hiddenness, and the like. So the name of Hashem is not mentioned. But the Zohar tells us that whenever it says HaMelech, the king, there is a double meaning. On one hand, the Pasuk refers to Achashverosh. On the other hand, it also refers to Melech Malchei Yamlochim. So, for example, that critical night when the king could not sleep, the whole turning point of the Megillah, Balayla Hahu Nadada Shinas HaMelech, that night, the sleep of the king was disturbed. On one hand, Itaka means Achashverosh couldn't sleep. On the other hand, it's a remez to what David HaMelech said, Hine lo yonum v'lo yishan, Shomer Yisrael, the guardian of Israel does not sleep. So that means, whenever you encounter a pasuk that has the word HaMelech in it, you have... Well, okay, I don't want to say that yet. Okay. Whenever you see a pasuk that has Melech in it, let's say without Achashverosh, although that will be a little bit of a question too, there are two meanings in that pasuk. One is human Achashverosh, and the other is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, by the same token, Haman itself is a symbolic name. In the other side of things, Haman was a person descended from Agag, the king of Amalek. Haman is from Amalek. And that physical person wanted to destroy Am Yisrael. And that physical person was hung. But Haman also represents a spiritual force in Shamayim that is Mekatreg, that levels accusations against the Jewish people and is ma'orer, awakens and arouses midas hadin and punishment. So, in a simple phrase, vayomer Haman lamelech, Haman says to the melech, there are two understandings. Flesh and blood Haman says to flesh and blood Achashverosh. But there's a deeper understanding that the koach of Amalek in Shemayim that seeks to arouse prosecution, kitrug, accusation against Am Yisrael is urging din and retribution from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, based on these two readings. So now, let's look at a pasuk. When Haman tries to make his case that the Jewish people are deserving of destruction, right? He has to make some logical argument to Achashverosh. Vayomer Haman lemelech. Haman says to the melech, Yeshnai am echad. There is a nation. Mefozar umeforad bein ha'amim. That is separated and scattered among many nations. Dasehem shonos mikolam. Their laws are different. They don't mix well. Their laws are different than everybody else. Es dasei hamelach einam osim. They do not obey the king's law. V'lamelach ein shover lahanicham. It is not worth the king's effort to let them live. So let's translate this verse, lower pshat and higher pshat. Lower pshat is, Haman is making a case that the Jews are parasitic and worthless. Number one, mefozer, mefora, they're not concentrated in any one place. Therefore, it's easy to kill them. You're not going to get a lot of resistance. Dasehem shonos, their practices are different. Again, Jews don't mix. As the Gemara says, Haman was a classic anti-Semite. He told Achashverosh, if a fly falls into their wine, they'll take out the fly and drink the wine. If you touch their wine, they'll pour out the glass. Their laws are different. They have no respect for you. You're worse than a fly. And then it says, they don't keep the king's laws. So again, the Gemara explains, every time you ask a Jew to do something, he has some excuse. It's Shabbos today, it's Pesach today, right? Holidays, everything's a Jewish holiday, right? I remember from my years teaching in university, you know, the great difficulties of September, Baruch Hashem in Eretz Yisrael, we don't have this, but September with Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, right? Every time. So that's the simple meaning. The simple meaning is Haman is simply saying, number one, the Jews are weak, so don't worry about it. They're easy to get rid of. And number two, they're not loyal. And number three, they're not productive. They're parasitic. But if you understand that the conversation that Haman has to Achashverosh is really a conversation, so to speak, that the Koyach of Amalek is having with Hashem, those very same words have a different meaning. Mefozar u'mefored does not just mean they're scattered and they're weak, but it means there is disunity and disharmony between them. They are divided against themselves. They are consumed with sinas chinam and lack of achdus and lack of avas Yisrael, and therefore they're not worthy of being saved. And when it says dasei hamelech einam osam, they don't keep the king's law, in Shemayim that means they're not keeping the Torah. So it turns out that in Shemayim, the Iker Kitrug against Am Yisrael was Mefozar u'mefored beina amim, sinas chinam, which was the cause for the Chorban of the Bayis Sheni. And although this is before the Bayis Sheni, but the roots of that sinas chinam were already there. That is why the first thing Esther says when Mordechai tells her about the Gezeira of Haman, and she says, get everybody together so they will fast. But her lashon was, Lech kenos es kol ha-yehudim. Bring all the Jews together. Because if our weakness is mefozar u'mefored bein ha-amim, our spiritual strength will only be if it is kenisa, if we come together. That is why Purim, which celebrates the downfall of Haman, has such an emphasis on Achdus and unity in Avas Yisrael. What is Mishloach Manos about, other than affirming and creating bonds of friendship? What is Matanos Le'Avyonim about, other than compassion and care for the downtrodden? That's why it's actually brought down in Mishloach Manos that l'chatchila you should send your Shalach Manos with a shaliach to get one more person involved, more people are involved, and you should send it to people that maybe you haven't gotten along with so well in the course of the year as a way of creating a friendship when it otherwise would not exist. Having said that, I don't want to give a shmooze on Shalach Manos. One should also try to be a Baal Chesed, because after all, Purim is only 1 month before Pesach. So one might think about sending kosher Pesach Shalach Manos or things that are not chametzdik, etc. So, you know, one has to weigh the chachma of how to send Shalach Manos in a proper way. And in any event, the Rambam already paskins that it's more important to give more matanos le'avyonim than Mishloach Manos. Okay, but be it as it may, therefore, here is what I want to say as an extension. When we talk about Haman buying the right to kill the Jews by shkalim, currency, so to speak, you have to understand that we're not just referring to Haman giving shkalim to Achashverosh, but rather there's kind of a permanent currency that Amalek in Shemayim uses to buy the right to afflict the Jews. And that currency is the claim of Sinas Chinam, Mefozer Mefarik. Now, as you understand, in a metaphorical way, the shekel is the currency of acquisition. So what are Haman's shkalim in Shemayim, so to speak? What are the shkalim of the Amalek in Shemayim against Am Yisrael? Mefozer Mefarik Bein Ha'amim. So now let's go back to Rav Shimon ben Lakish. Hashem knew that Haman would use shkalim to buy the right to destroy Am Yisrael. Metaphorically, that means Amalek in Shemayim would use the shkalim of Mefozer Mefored Bein Ha'amim to attack Am Yisrael. So Hashem gave us the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel to counteract the Shiklei Haman. So I raised the question, how does our Machzis HaShekel counteract the Shiklei Haman? Well, once you understand that Shiklei Haman is a metaphor for Mefozer Mefored Bein Ha'amim, Sinas Chinam, the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel directly addresses that. How is that so? Let's go back to the question we began with. The Torah says Machzis HaShekel has to be uniform. The rich person gives no more, and the poor person gives no less. Why can't the rich person give more? Why shouldn't he give more? The Mefarshim explain that rich and poor does not only refer to money. Rich and poor refers to the entire range of human talents and abilities. There are people in life that seem to be blessed with many, many resources. Money might be one of them. Could be wisdom, charisma, leadership ability, organizational ability, high energy. And then there are people who we might regard, or they might regard themselves, as aniyim, as bereft in some way. And the lesson of the Torah is, when it comes to having a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is, after all, what the korbanos of the Beis HaMikdash are about, remember the whole word korban is to draw near. Rich and poor stand before God with equality of access, equality of dignity, equality of love. And the reason is because Hashem does not judge us by how much we objectively accomplish in the world. Hashem judges us by how much of ourselves have we given to Him. So the ani, the person who seemingly, of course everyone does have a talent, but the person who seemingly doesn't have so much to give, but they give what they can with sincerity, they are equally cherished and treasured. And indeed, just as the poor person who gives $5 may be considered to be greater than the multi-billionaire who gives $100,000, it may very well be that the person of lesser abilities who gives more to Hashem may be more beloved. The Mabit, a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo, gives the mashal of a person who is able to learn, let's say, 100 blot of Gemara a day, tremendous amount of Gemara, and instead he only does 50. 50, that's also a tremendous amount. And another person struggles to only learn one daf a month, a week, a month. So we look at these two people. One person is learning 50 blot a day. That means he finishes Shas basically every month. That's a pretty good accomplishment. and the other person is struggling and he does like one blot. So the way we look at it is, well, listen, you're a sincere guy, but, you know, Nebuch, I mean, you're doing your best, you know, we'll pat him on the head and say, but it really doesn't count that much. So we'll think, we might not say it. But in God's book, the Mabit says, it's actually the opposite. Because this guy that is going through Shas every month is only giving Hashem 50% of what he could give. And the other person, I mean, nobody's 100%, but the other person is giving closer to 100%. So the lesson of Machtzis HaShekel, in its uniformity, is that whether your talents are great or your talents are paltry, everybody has an equal opportunity to be makasher to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, in our schools, we give lip service to this, but we very rarely actually carry it out. We tell Talmidim, Talmidos, the main thing is your effort, the main thing is your work, even if you don't do so well, if you try your hardest, that is what counts. And yet, again, I'm not an expert in all the schools, maybe there are schools that do it differently, but and yet, as far as I know, the A or the Aleph will be to the person who gets the better score. But in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's book, this is not a platitude. In HaKadosh Baruch Hu's book, this is the truth. This is the reality. The reality is, how much did you give Hashem of what he gave you? And therefore, every single person has the exact same chance for his karvus to the Ribono Shel Olam. Because whatever you were given, you can give back. And that's how Hashem judges you. That is the fundamental lesson of Machtzis HaShekel. Now, if you think about this, you can understand how if we internalize this attitude, sinas chinam gets severely reduced. Because often, hatred comes from a sense of rivalry or jealousy or inadequacy. I look at people and they accomplish this and they do that and I can't do that and that hurts. Because I feel myself insecure and inadequate and a failure. So as a result, I want to pull them down with the illusion that somehow it'll make me look better or feel better, although it doesn't do that. But if one understands that everybody, in a sense, are equal, everybody has that same access by using what they have, then I'm not jealous. I have my chelek, he has their chelek. I have my ability, they have their abilities. Our abilities are different. But each of us does what we can with what Hashem gave us. We stand with equality before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you understand, Machtzis HaShekel counteracts the spiritual shkalim of Haman. The spiritual shkalim of Haman were Mefozer, Mefored, Bein HaAmim. That was his currency. Our currency is Mevatel, his currency. Now, it's also true, to take it the other way, another source of sinas chinam may come not from my sense of inferiority, but from my sense of superiority. It may come from my arrogance and my gaiva as I look down at other people that I deem not as worthy as me. Once again, Machtzis HaShekel negates that idea. Because it says, just because you think you can do more than him, that doesn't make you better. Maybe that person is doing the best that they can with what they were given. Okay? So in both directions, the uniformity of Machtzis HaShekel negates the attitudes of either jealousy or arrogance that could cause sinat chinam. Now, let me focus on another aspect of Machtzis HaShekel, because there are two aspects here. One is the uniformity requirement. Rich guy gives no more than poor guy. And that shows the idea that all of us are equal in the eyes of Hashem potentially, because we are judged on what we give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, based on what we have. Another teaching, which is a very well-known teaching, is that the machzis ha-shekel is half. Why do you give half shekel? Why not a whole shekel? The answer is because a half is incomplete until it is combined with another half. And that's a lesson too. On both sides of the equation, that tells the person who seems to be an unimportant person, so to speak, without you, Klal Yisrael is incomplete. You know, take the spaceships they used to make, and now they may go back to doing it again. So these spaceships have, or these capsules, they have like 50,000 little parts. And some of them are screws that you can get for, you know, 5 shekel in a hardware store, or whatever it would be. A little screw, an insignificant piece of junk. And yet, if that screw is not functioning in its right place, there could be tragic, tragic accidents. People don't realize how essential you are. Everybody is incomplete unless we connect. I think I told you the story once of the, so forgive me for repeating, of the famous conductor, Arturo Toscanini, who really was a musical genius. And there was a reporter, I think, for the New York Times who wanted to follow him around one day. And Toscanini said, well, I have to listen to a concert. I don't have time to talk to you. He says, I just want to sit with you. So Toscanini was not feeling well that day. So this was the NBC Orchestra, which at the time was a very esteemed orchestra. So Toscanini was sitting at home listening to a concert on the radio. And the radio wasn't even a high-quality radio. And as he's listening to a concert on the radio, he said, how come there's only 15 violins and not 16? There's supposed to be 16 violins. I only hear 15 of them. So the reporter said, you must be joking. I mean, this is not, a human being cannot, they'll be so sensitive to this. So anyway, so the reporter went and checked with the orchestra. And the orchestra said, well, yeah, right before the performance, one of the violinists called in that he was sick and it was too late to get a replacement. And we figured nobody would notice the difference anyway. But Toscanini noticed. So the reporter said to Toscanini, he says, this is a miracle. How does this happen? So Toscanini said, listen, probably nobody in the audience knew the difference. But when you're in the orchestra, I'm sorry, when you're the conductor of the orchestra, you understand how every musician is part of the music. Hashem is the orchestra of the symphony of not only Am Yisrael, but really the whole world. And if some violin is a little off, maybe we don't notice it somehow. We don't pay attention, but something is not right. And that's what the Machzis HaShekel is, that indeed we're all needed. And on the other side, it reminds the arrogant person, don't think you don't need the other person. So it tells the person who feels unneeded how needed they are, and it tells the person who thinks he doesn't need others how wrong he is. And therefore, this is the meaning of the statement, that the shekalim of Haman are mefozar mefored bein ha'amim. Our mitzvah of machzis ha-shekel combats that. Now, this is, again, such an important lesson. It permeates, you know, we've looked at Mishlei many, many times. The pasuk chanoch l'nar al pi darko, to train a child according to his way, in which it is such a key aspect of parenting, but of, I mean, really, it's a question of parenting, a question of the relationship of husband and wife, and indeed, looking into our own lives, in which we have to realize the uniqueness of our identities, the abilities that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, and the fact that they don't track other people is not a cause for sadness. Maybe a cause of celebration, that there's something within us that is special and unique. And what is sometimes a little painful, because we live in such a culture of publicity, is that sometimes these gifts are not necessarily going to be public gifts. That's the thing that's a little hard. It may be that we're not going to get recognition. Notice, I'm not suggesting everybody can be a public person one way or the other. Sometimes it's just the private chizuk that you give your children, give your husband, your wife, the kindness, you know, and nobody knows, nobody pays attention, nobody acknowledges. But there's one that does acknowledge, and there's one that does pay attention, and there's one that's keeping a record. And that's the only one that ultimately counts. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one should get a great deal of chizuk in their avodah. It's really a perversion, and unfortunately it's a perversion that all of us are subject to, that somehow it's only the public that is, no, the public function that's worthy of celebration, admiration, and acclaim. And there are people who live and die in obscurity. And like, you know, what did they accomplish in their life? But that's not at all the definition of what an accomplishment is. Indeed, the greatest accomplishments are accomplishments that within myself, if I could conquer my anger, my selfishness, my egotism. Nobody knows the struggles a person might go through. But that is the greatest accomplishment of all. Again, Shlomo HaMelech says, Moshel Berucho Milo Chedir, he who rules over his spirit is greater than the person who conquers a city. In fact, that is the Vilna Gaon says, that is the makor in Pirkei Avos of Eseyu Gibor, who is a hero, HaKovesh Yisitzro. It is from this pasuk, Moshel Berucho Milo Chedir. Okay, so that is the message of Parshas Shkolim, and that is how we countermand the kitrug of Amalek, which is Mephozer Mephored Bein Amim. So I always want to wish everybody a good Chodesh Adar Sheni, and Be'ez Hashem, we should have much, much simcha.